entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
For the best in morning radio, tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, only on LA Talk Radio.
And good morning. Welcome to Monday, July 14th. Welcome to the show. Hi, Charlotte.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Today's Bastille Day. Do you know what that is?
No idea.
You should, because France is right next to you over there. But that's France's Independence Day today.
Oh.
So it's called the Day of the Bastille or the Bastille Day, which was a prison that was stormed when the French Revolution started.
Huh.
So yeah, something like that.
So it seems like so many countries' Independence Day is in July.
Oh, really?
Canada, America, France, or USA.
That's true, yeah.
Is
Canada too?
Yeah, Canada was, I don't remember when.
But it
was in this month.
Yeah, I know. Maybe a few days ago. I remember somebody posting about it, but it was on 4th of July, and I thought, they're encroaching on our Independence Day here.
Oh, maybe
what's
it was the end
on?
Of June.
Yeah,
it's been around. It's been
around. Probably July. Yeah, who cares? But if it's not American, we don't care, right?
Speaking of Europe, Germany won the World Cup.
Yes, they did.
Did you watch the game?
I did not watch the game, but I was sitting at a sports bar and I heard people watching.
Well, there you
it.
Go. I didn't watch it either.
I was busy eating, you know, but. But yeah, there was a lot of excitement, obviously.
It wasn't until the 119th minute.
Right, it was like extra time, right?
Yeah. 119 minutes is a long time.
It is to wait for a goal, right?
I'm kind of glad it's over.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why, was it too stressful on you?
No, it was just so long and, you know, nothing.
It's true. It's been like two, three weeks already.
And a lot of people think it was fixed.
Oh, you think
Germany
so?
Germany had the easiest bracket and they didn't have any competition until like the final game.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. We were in their bracket. Weren't we supposed to be good? I mean, remember we played them? It was a tie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but maybe we're not considered that strong.
I don't think the USA is considered to be one of the stronger soccer teams, to be honest.
Not by a far stretch, right? Wow. So, yeah. So, this is funny. And so, you watched the game?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, you didn't watch
no.
it? Okay. Did you work at the time? Or?
No, I wasn't. I had Sunday off. So
oh, nice.
I went paddle boarding and it was beautiful.
Yeah. Actually, I saw the picture of you doing a handstand. A headstand on a board, right? What was it? A surfboard?
It was a paddle board.
A paddle board.
Yeah.
What are those?
It's like you stand up with a paddle and
with the paddle.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
all
you,
right.
Like, paddle around.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's fun.
That was a
really
pretty cool headstand. I mean, my God, you know, you're like straight. So you're still in shape, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
I try.
I mean, how do you balance on something like that?
It was hard.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, I've seen so many. I've never paddleboarded before until yesterday. And I wanted to try a headstand because I've seen so many people do it.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I've got to do it. And I was able to do it, which I was surprised about.
Yeah.
I was surprised. But it's yoga. I did yoga for a while, and you do a lot of headstands in yoga.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would never be able to
balance. But it was different
like
with the current.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
It was fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, I spent a couple hours in Venice yesterday. And, you know, you've been to Venice Beach, right? It's just a crazy place. It's a really cool place. You have all kinds of artists displaying like weird things and stuff, and it's fascinating just to watch people there.
Right.
You know, so I enjoy that. And by the way, I bought a bike over the weekend.
I saw a photo.
I put a photo up so everybody will know and hold me to it because I can't back out now.
Did you ride yesterday?
I rode yesterday, not in the beach, but. I rode around here yesterday and the day before, and it's just amazing, you know. And I'm really happy because it's exercise, and I'm not doing it for the exercise. I mean, yes, I need the exercise and stuff, but I would do it anyway. It's just enjoyable to ride the bike. So
and when the weather's so beautiful out.
You know, when it's nice and cool after the sun goes down, it's amazing. Not in the heat, though. Forget about that. You know, I mean, I'm not riding in the heat. Sometimes you see people like jogging in the heat and you go, what are you doing? You know, can't you just wait till later in the day? But they don't mind it. They do it, you know.
I don't know how people do it.
Yeah.
Like running, I agree, running in the heat just sounds so miserable to me. Like dripping with sweat.
Swimming is a different thing altogether,
yeah,
right?
Swimming, you're in the water. You're cool.
Exactly.
You sweat, you don't even know.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of riding it to work now every day. The reason I didn't this morning is because I need to make an arrangement for my coffee to be ready here because I can't really bring it. I mean, I can get like a bottle holder, but at this point, I don't want to punch or drill any holes in my frame yet.
Right.
You know, and that's how you put the water bottles there.
Yeah,
you definitely have to drill the frame. So I just figure I'll make coffee here when I come. So, and then I don't have to worry about
it. Wow.
You know.
So that's getting adventurous.
Yes, I know. So I have to think about all these things. Yeah. It would take me exactly 2 minutes to get here. You know, and I won't have to look for parking or anything.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be just cool.
Right.
And it's a lot of fun. It's you feel it's dangerous when you ride on the streets, you know, especially on like Woodman, the main streets, even when there is like a bike lane and stuff. But even in the small streets, you can't see what's going on. So I ordered this mirror that goes on your helmet, you know,
and
you
nice.
Can see everything. Yeah, it goes like this. It's a small mirror, and then you can look behind you.
Look around.
Know? Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I know. It's a safe idea, too. Oh, my God. You know, I wasn't going to wear a helmet either. I don't like helmets, but I think you're required by law to do it. And besides, it'd be stupid not to.
Yeah. Better being safe than sorry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but man, it's expensive. I mean, I spent almost as much on the stuff for the bike that I spent on the bike. Yeah,
right.
But I did end up getting it at Sports Authority. I'm glad you told me about the bikes there because they had the best selection there.
Yeah, and they're way better prices.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
Like, you know, I mean, what? It's like, remember I told you I went to the bike shop and they wanted like $2,000 for a bike.
That's insane.
Yeah, I know.
Insane money.
And the cheapest they had was an ugly looking one for $600.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, here I got it for $300. There was a discount also. So for
$275,
I got twins, you know? I mean, it's not just any bike. So that was good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do you remember, like, rally bicycles? Those are from England, right? Like, rally? I think they are, because I remember when I was a kid, they were, like, the hottest thing.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they have them here, so I'm not
really?
Sure. But something tells me, something is associating it with England for me. I don't know why.
I don't know.
Yeah. But those were, like, the hottest thing when I was a kid. You know, everybody had to have a rally. So,
Is that what you got?
No, this time, well, I have rallies at home
that
I'm going to sell because I left them outside. And even though they were covered, still the weather just really ravaged
them,
you know.
Yeah.
So the chains are rusty and things like that, you know, probably needs new tires. But I figured, you know, if I put work into it, it'll probably be like $100 and something. Mm-hmm. And I can't probably sell it for any more than that. So what's the point, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So I'll just leave it the way it is and give it as a gift to someone.
Yeah.
So if you want a bike and you want to fix it up a little bit, I mean, all it needs is some tuning and stuff and new handlebars because they sort of like melted from the heat.
Oh, wow.
But it's a great bike. I paid like $450 for it some time ago.
Yeah.
But I wanted a new one, you know, so what the hell? I'm spoiled. I figured if I have a new one, I'll have the desire to ride
exactly.
it.
Exactly. When you have something new and it's a new toy, like it makes you want to use it.
Right.
You know? So
exactly.
Make you want to ride your bike.
Yeah. So that's cool. So you went in the water on the weekend, right?
Yeah.
Where were you? In Marina Del Rey?
Yeah, Marina Del Rey.
Is there like a place to swim there too? Because it's usually boats, right?
Not really.
No, huh?
I went in the
you
marina,
went in.
Yeah.
Where all the boats
are. But there was no one really swimming.
Yeah.
It's the only one in the water. but there was sea lions and it was crazy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How cool.
I didn't realize they were around in Marina Del Rey.
Yeah, I know.
It's like maybe he's lost because he was like by a boat and then swimming along. Then there was a couple more.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think I actually saw some of those when I went to Catalina. You know, took a boat to Catalina.
Yeah.
So that's in San Pedro. So I remember there they had some.
They have them there, yeah.
Yeah, so
I
maybe
was shocked
they go
around by all the boats and in, like it wasn't in the ocean. It was just
right.
in, by all the boats in the marina.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, we have a couple of guests in the studio, and we're going to get to them right now. We have an Australian musician, and you're, it says, a blues man, right?
Yeah.
So it's blues mostly that you play.
Well, it's a modern interpretation of it, I guess.
Oh, wow.
You know, I'm very influenced by blues music, but I, you know, trying to take it in a different direction.
I see.
Who's yeah. your cool. favorite blues?
So let me introduce
Hendrix,
him first.
Probably.
Sorry.
Oh, Hendrix. was yeah, Hendrix, I guess, he was rock and blues, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, what I do songs, is pretty rocky too, I guess.
Right.
But, yeah.
But he did have some blues. That's right. I never thought of him as a blues singer.
You know? Yeah, I guess you're right. It just all comes from everything soulful. Like, you know, what I love at the moment is that, like, Black Keys are so huge. Because I regard them as very bluesy.
Really?
You know, they've got a pop sensibility and it's a little bit rocky, but it's extremely bluesy. Mm. But, you know, I mean, I'm so, like, sort of into that genre that I hear it in a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
And, like, a lot of the riffs I play, if I play heavy, people go, oh, you know, like, are you into Black Sabbath or Zeppelin or things like that? Yeah. And I'm like... No, but I'm into the influence. I guess I'm into the same influences that those guys were listening
right.
to back in the day, and it just you end up at that same point. So right. when I think I'm playing really bluesy, I'm probably just playing rocky. That's what most people would say.
I see. Anyway. Cool. Well, we're going to listen to some of your music in a little bit. We're talking to Ash Grunwald now. So you're Australian. What are you doing here? Are you like on a on a tour or something?
Yeah, I just finished a U.S. tour.
Uh-huh.
And you just
finished it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you left us for the end, like the best for last.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, I would have loved to have done this one before the gig.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I basically did 28 gigs over a month, opening up for an Aussie act called Xavier Rudd.
Uh-huh.
And he's been coming to the States for the last decade, and he does really well.
Mm.
So we played some amazing venues and really prestigious venues, and it meant a hell of a lot to me. Like we were playing the Fillmore up in San Francisco before we came to LA, and, you know, for me to, you know, stand on the stage that Hendrix was wailing on, you know, and they're Grateful Dead and...
Oh, really? They all performed there?
Yeah, and Santana and Aretha Franklin recorded live albums there. And and that's, very you cool, know, that so. That's the ones that, you know, the Fillmore's very prestigious, and that's one that the one that I know about from all the way over in Australia, you know. But I'm sure the whole time I've been playing on stages that all of my heroes have played on.
Yeah.
And for me, that's one of the most special things about building a career here in the US. And it's something that I ignored for a long time in my career. And I, you know, I played it, just stayed in Australia and played a lot and played in Europe and other places. But I didn't really open up the can of worms that is playing in the US for an overseas act, because it's a... Once you start, it's almost like you do a deal, or not you do a deal with the devil, but you open up this can of worms because it's so big.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's a huge
start,
market here,
yeah.
huh?
Mm-hmm.
I know everybody comes here and they go, "Wow, you know, I mean, this is huge," you know, and that's pretty much the way it is. Now you brought someone with you, and his name is Christian. Welcome to the show, Christian. I just want to introduce you, so when we talk to you, people will know who you are. So, how are you guys related? Are you friends? Is it the work relationship?
Well, it What's is. A, we are friends, but we Christian is Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
So when you guys were saying about
July
not
1st.
Caring about...
so he knew about
July 1st? We were glancing
July
over.
1st? Okay. Yeah. So, okay. So he knew we were like... So he was nodding when we said July. Okay. So, okay. But he was almost there because July 1st is almost...
And I was going
June.
Like this when you said June.
Yeah.
I saw you do that.
And Christian is my Canadian booking agent and also a great friend of many years. And he'll be... hopefully embarking on this U.S. endeavor as well and touring around.
Oh, really? So you're a musician too?
I'm a harmonica player, actually.
Really?
So I get to grace the stage every now and again when Ash lets me.
Uh-huh. That's cool. I mean, harmonica is pretty cool. I like songs with harmonicas, isn't it? Like, Bob Dylan used a lot of harmonica in his songs, right?
He did.
Who else? Who are some of your favorites?
I mean, my influences span for the harmonica from someone like Neil Young all the way to Little Walter. So,
yeah.
Which is very odd for anybody listening that loves the harmonica. But I just love the instrument. And so.
Yeah.
And everyone in between. So
awesome. Very cool. Yeah. So, Ash, where in Australia are you from?
I'm from Melbourne originally, but I live in a place called Byron Bay now, which is sort of near the Gold Coast. It's like halfway up Australia, up the East Coast. So it's like a subtropical kind of environment. It's very much a natural kind of paradise.
Really?
Yeah, so I really miss it when I'm away.
It's so beautiful. I've been to the Gold Coast. I went to Brisbane I traveled all the way up about 3 years ago. It's so beautiful. I think it's the best of England and America. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's very physically beautiful. Yeah. And that's why we settled there because, you know, I've got two young kids and I'd been touring around Australia for a decade and I always wanted to live up there. I'm a really keen surfer. And it's good waves there. You can sort of surf every day. But, when it came to, well, where do you want to bring your kids up? You know, it's like, it's just so, you know, great, you know, like little farmers markets everywhere, organic food. And yeah. You know, we grow our own veggies and we've got chickens and, you know, it's just living the life of a more organic, sustainable kind of life. Which is a great antidote to living on the road, partying all the time.
Right,
you know,
right.
That's the other side.
That's what I was going to ask you. So, I mean, you've got kids. Are you married also?
Yeah.
You're married. So how is it like on the road? I mean, does your wife come with you on the road?
Well, this is a good example. This is the longest I've been away from my family.
Mm-hmm.
I try and, you know, to Christian's great, not disgust because he's with me on it, but right. It makes his life hard. Booking me in Canada because I only ever go away for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something.
Uh-huh.
3 weeks at the most. So uh-huh. This was my record, and it was just because it was such a great opportunity. And mm-hmm. My whole family and my whole team, we do want to build a career in America. So we made a sacrifice, and I was away from them for a month, and then I flew them over to LA. And I was playing in Chicago like last week, and I flew over and saw them for like 4 days. We hung out here and then I flew back and met the bus again and then toured for another week and now we're back again.
Wow.
So that's how we... And then they're going to come to Canada and that's how we sort of mix it up so that, you know, I, you know, see my family. And
right.
It's the biggest pitfalls. I mean, I've got a lot of friends in... Of course, a lot of friends in the industry, but also a lot of friends who are really at that size of getting the tour, you know, the bigger size of... doing 3 month US tours in the tour bus and whatever.
Right.
And it's just such a strain on relationships.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You know, I think it's really important to me to have balance in my life. And if it's just a question of money, well, you know, I'll drag my family around and we'll have a ball and live the dream. And, you know, like my daughter who's 5, she's seen the Eiffel Tower 2 or 3 times. She's, you know, she's got way more stamps in her passport than I had when I was like, I don't know, 25.
Yeah.
And, you know,
amazing.
Yeah.
So they get to travel quite a bit because you do.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so you came to the States and Canada. Any plans to go to Europe? Have you been to Europe on performance? I mean, you just mentioned the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if you went there just on vacation or on a tour.
No, I played there, yeah. For
you
the last
played
10
there
years.
Too?
Played there a fair bit. Yeah.
Really?
Played in a lot in Belgium and France. A couple of gigs in Spain. Fair bit in England.
Yeah.
I never even knew I was going to play music as a profession. And the things that I've seen already and the cultures that music has allowed me to touch and get an insight on, you know, like just see.
It's true.
Like how do they roll in Japan?
Right.
You know, or whatever. And, you know, these are things that I had no idea about until I traveled. And I don't even know, if I didn't play music, I don't think I would have saved up really and... and travel being to all those places. So it's just been amazing.
That's true. Yeah. So, and you're doing something you love and stuff. When did you start? I mean, that must have been at a young age, right? When did you first pick up an instrument?
Oh, when I was 10.
Really?
Yeah. I used to play with my granddad. Yeah, just play guitar. And then I started writing songs pretty early.
Yeah.
And I never dared to dream that I'd be a musician. Yeah. So, you know, I went to university and, you know, did a few different things. And then by the age of about 22, I was just over it. I just moved into the city of Melbourne and I just started playing in little clubs and stuff, and it just built from there.
Wow, very cool.
So what university did you go to?
It's called Deakin University in Australia, so yeah.
And you didn't graduate in anything to do with music?
No. It's so funny. I did a Bachelor of Arts and a teaching degree, and in my arts degree it was media, so I was like trying to get into script writing and filmmaking, and you know, you have your electives, and I had a choice between one of my electives I could choose animation or sound recording, and I was so far from believing that I would ever be a musician that I chose animation, and I'm just like, I look back on it how things have worked out, and I was like, yeah, I just feel so fortunate. I just had no idea what was going to happen. Like, now I have my own studio. But it would have been handy if I actually studied this. But I had no idea.
Yeah. Wow. With music, usually you don't have to study it, you know, unless you become like, yeah, if you want to teach it and things like that. But I think even the Beatles, they say, couldn't even read music, right?
Yeah, reading or music is a technology that was, you know, invented in an era when you didn't even have recorded music,
right.
And so that was the method of you actually, like, you hearing something on the radio, you needed a dude to read that and play it to you.
That's true, yeah.
So
today you can play by ear.
Yeah, I think there's a lot too much weight put on that, especially when it comes to teaching kids and stuff, because unless you're going to be in an orchestra,
right,
it's not very relevant at all.
But let me ask you this. I mean, if someone picks up like a songbook or something, a notation book, I think it would help, don't you think? I mean,
that's not really like, you know, when you can get what they call tabs off the internet,
right, you
and
can
read
tabs.
Chords and stuff. That's
right.
That's really cool. That's
right.
Really fun. But reading music, like notes on a ledger,
notes,
that's
right.
That's what I the reason I'm dissing it is because it takes so much work to get to that point. That all you're doing is mimicking something that's written on a page.
Right.
If you put that same amount of work into playing the instrument, you'd be a virtuoso. Why not just do that and create? Because that's very musical, to create music. Whereas, a bit contentious here, but to put all of that work, like say 8 years of your life, so that you can read something off a page, you might still not be able to jam with your friends, but you're at this high level. It's just like, it seems a waste to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. I guess it depends on your perspective, you know. Yeah. I happen to know how to read music because I
I thought
that was you good at jamming?
Jamming? Yeah, too. But my son is better at it, actually.
Does he read
played
music?
In a long time. He reads stabs, not music.
That proves my theory.
You see, there you go. I mean, in rock music, you don't really need
the notation. Context dependent, I guess.
So, now, Christian, have you been involved in music too? I mean, you're a booking agent and everything like that. How long have you been involved in doing something like that?
I guess about 9-10 years.
Really?
As far as the sort of managerial role goes. I met a woman in Australia a long time ago. I went to a music manager's forum one day. I took a break. I come from the professional alpine ski world. So I took a break for a year, and I lived in Australia, and I went to this music manager's forum, met this woman, which led to opening a show for Ash, and that's how we met.
Oh, I see. How cool. Right. So do you have like a certain amount of artists that you represent, or do you take on new ones all the time? How does it work?
Yeah, I have a certain number. Just one.
Oh, okay.
Just Ash.
Mr. Ash.
Statistically perfect for me.
Yeah, there you go. Put in 100% of his time into you. Why not? Yeah, that sounds cool. And so you grew up in Canada. Where in Canada?
I grew up in a small little German town, actually, called Kitchener, Ontario, and then moved to the mountains
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was seeking the snow and big mountains.
Wow.
And I moved to Whistler, which is just north of Vancouver.
Right.
Oh, okay, wow. Cool. So, oh, yeah, the Vancouver area is beautiful there. Have you been?
Yeah.
Yeah, huh? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you went on that cruise, right?
Yeah. I know. I went on a cruise to Vancouver.
Well, it is so beautiful there.
It was like the last point was Vancouver. We went to Victoria and Astoria and a few other places, and Vancouver was the last one.
Yeah.
But it was really, I loved it there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. People only have good things to say about it. So, Ash, let's talk a little bit about your music. You released an album here. When was this released?
Well, just for that album that you're holding there, which I think it's just a self-titled one, and people can get it on iTunes, but it's really just a compilation. I've done 10 albums, so
really?
It wasn't very practical to bring the whole back catalog along, so I just made a compilation.
Yeah, I can see them all on the bottom. Now, I mean, I thought it was a pretty ambitious CD. It's got 17 tracks on it. And that's a lot of songs to put on a CD. So that's pretty cool. You obviously have a lot of material. So, so let's start. We're going to play a couple of your songs. The first one is Walking. Tell us a little bit about Walking.
Well, that's very geographically relevant right now because that's I think it's the only one. Yeah, it's it. It was on a Hollywood movie called Limitless. Mm-hmm. Which has
with Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Bradley, do you remember
Cooper,
that one where he would take the pills and he would get like superpowers and stuff? Go ahead.
So I was really lucky enough to get this song on over a montage, which that's when like in the movies when time speeds up and
they show you different things that happen. Right?
They get what needs to get done quickly,
right?
In the movie, done well. It was when he first took the pill.
Uh huh.
And he looked at his room, which was a metaphor for his life. It was all messy and whatever.
Right.
And he started getting his supernatural mental abilities and speeding up and, going for it.
Right.
And then that's when my song came on. And I was very stoked. Obviously, the guy who mastered it, the movie, just cranked it up.
Really?
And I never thought... when I found out it was in the movie, I thought, cool, that's amazing, it's great.
Right.
But I thought, okay, background in the cafe scene or something, but it was like really loud. So my wife and I were there in the cinema on the Gold Coast, 12 o'clock midday, and not many people in the cinema, and we're just checking it out. And it was just like, so, as I said, so loud and full on. I was like, wow. And it just really took me back to, when I was recording it.
Right. Wow. How cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you mean when you found out about it? I mean, obviously you submitted it, right? It's not like they just picked it. No.
No. Well, I'm a published artist. I have publishing. That's what, that's what gets you on adverts and
I see.
And movies and stuff. So, it's a really funny thing, the publishing world, and I'm still getting like good things from that song, and they're good financially and stuff.
Right.
But it is really like winning the lottery, because you've already done the song.
Right.
There's nothing you can really do to make somebody use it for a movie. You can't go knock on Scorsese's door and say, "Hey, dude, I reckon this track 3 will suit your next movie." So it happens away from you, and then you get this email, and it's usually like, actually like a large sum of money that you're going to get. You just, like, bonanza.
Wow.
And then there was this Ben Stiller movie that there's another track on there that they were going to use.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this big sum of money. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, you're going to get this. And I was like, sick, yes, we'll do it, okay.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like a week later, oh, no, sorry, it's going to be a quarter of that. Okay, sick, yeah, let's do it anyway. Oh, they don't want to use it. Oh, okay. The answer is always just like, from my perspective, yes, let's do it.
Yeah.
But that's why it's good to have a publisher, because I don't know how I would ever charge for something like that. If they said to me, look, just give it to us for free, millions of people will see it, I'd probably be like, yeah, no worries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's why sometimes new artists get tied down into bad contracts with record companies, because they're just dying to get published, that, you know, they, and then they become really big and they realize that they really didn't get a good deal
out
of this, you know. So, yeah, but I can see that, you know. I mean, when you're getting started, you just want people to listen to your music. You don't care if they pay for it or not. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm glad somebody else is charging on my behalf.
Okay, so let's listen to Ash Grunwald, and the song is Walking. Going to fade it a little bit so we can move on with the interview. Wow, man, this is some, I mean, I can see a lot of influences there. I mean, I can hear Hendrix and all that stuff, you know, it's really cool.
And I recognize the song from the movie.
What's that?
I recognize the song.
Oh, did you?
Really?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Wow, you remember it.
Yeah.
Wow, how cool is that?
And I can see how it's the perfect fit for the movie.
Yeah,
and
I know.
It's crazy to think that when the people in the movies are searching for songs. I mean, they go through so many songs, and to find the exact one, that must have been a pretty cool experience to know that my song is the one that fits so perfectly for this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. When I first did sign a publishing deal, I was like really hoping, I hate to harp on that word, you know, but bluesy, in inverted commas. I was saying to the publishers at the time, you know, oh, I think it's good because, you know, that stuff is really suited to movies and different things. But I didn't. I was sort of talking it up, hoping that something would happen. But then my good old buddies, the Black Keys, which I should send them a Christmas card because they got in every movie, you know, like about 2 or 3 years ago. They were,
really?
But still now, but like they had them on every movie with that riffy kind of sound. So I think it made it a bit more flavor of the month as well, that kind of sound.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
That's handy.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's not like you wrote the song especially for the film, but they just found one that really fits that rush that he had in his head and all that stuff, you know.
And that's what I was going to say before. Like, it was really weird for me in the cinema because it just took me instantly back to when I was singing those words, and most of them I was making up on the spot. And I was singing through a harmonica microphone into a guitar amp. To get that really distorted kind of sound. And I was like down on the floor, like really putting everything into it. And yeah, while I was watching the movie, it just took me back to that moment. It was like so surreal. I was like, wow. Never thought that would happen. Yeah.
Good for you. Did you find that this has helped your career at all?
Well, it's good. Like,
most it's nice of my, to have on the resume and stuff. I mean, obviously.
It's good for that. And also, it's got almost, if you add them all up, it's got about 800,000 hits on YouTube. That clip split over, like the Limitless movie put that on YouTube, and then I have my film clip on YouTube.
I see.
And then, the Vampire Diaries just used it as well, and they're getting more hits. So it's got a lot of hits. So I guess a lot of people probably in the States have looked at it on YouTube.
Yeah.
So I've just got to go around and tour and connect with those people and go, remember me? Remember that movie?
Yeah.
But I better not be saying it in 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, this movie. You know? Probably there's a statute of limitations or something on that.
But your music stands on its own, I'm sure. Now, do you have, you must have a band, right? Do you have a regular band that tours with you?
I do all different formats, but I'm mainly known for being a one-man band.
Really? Even on stage?
Yeah, well, on stage, yeah.
No, because, I mean, I can see where recording, you can record being just one person and play all the different instruments, but how do you do it in your performance?
Well, I play the kick drum on my left foot. And then I have another pedal on the right foot, which is the snare drum. So you've got the boom,
boom.
And then I play guitar and sing.
Do you sit?
And I sit, yeah.
I was about to say, because standing up doing that, how do you do that?
I have done that before, and that really hurts the calf muscles.
Yeah, I bet.
But, and I, you know, I've done a lot of experimentation over the years because a good portion of the even that song actually was made with a hip hop producer, using loops and, you know, different like computer music basically, and I've done that for a long time, and it was, you know, my whole mission statement to make a new kind of music that fused elements of like say dance music and hip hop kind of grooves with that bluesy kind of playing and singing. And so I did do that over 3 or 4 albums. So live I would trigger some of those hip hop loops and stuff with my controlling it like a DJ kind of thing, but with my feet. And that was really fun to do for a while. But now I'm over that. I'm going back to the more organic thing. And I think live that's more impressive because it's not very common for somebody to be pumping out a lot of sound like that just by themselves. So a bit of a kind of gimmick, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
But I bet that gets you a lot of notice because not many people can do that.
Yeah, I think, and that's why I got rid of the loops thing, because I was like, I've invested so much time in getting good at doing something organically, and then to go back to, you know, using essentially a repeating backing track was, you know, it's like, nah. So that's why I've thrown that back out and gone back to my first love of just trying to generate as much noise as I can by myself. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I mean, did you consciously decide that you don't want a band? I mean, how does it work?
Probably about Xavier, who I was just touring with, he was a one-man band as well and really amazing. You know, plays a didgeridoo and lots of percussion and stuff. But he's doing a band thing now. But when we were both, you know, in our early days, probably about 13 years ago, we, you know, crossed paths with each other. And I remember discussing it with him. And, you know, it was just like what you said before. You know, I'd do the same material in a band and be like, oh, cool, you know, another three-piece blues rock band, you know. Mm-hmm. But solo, it's like, oh, wow, you know, like that's something really different.
Right.
That's true.
And still 10 years later, in the States, it's still not a massively, or even in Australia, it's not a massively common thing.
Right.
And I just think in music, you know, we've heard it all before in music. And we've had probably 50 years now of a three-piece rock, basically rock outfit,
right,
doing, you know, bluesy sort of rocky music. And, you know, it's still cool when a new band comes along and does it. But even the Black Keys and the White Stripes, the cool thing about them when they're starting out is that it was a two-piece with no bass player.
Yeah.
So I just think it's interesting. If you can at all, if you've got two options, one is different to what everyone else is doing and the other one is the same.
Right.
I'd go for the different one. You know?
That's true. You want every to stand time out a little bit. Yeah.
And it is easy to tour.
Yeah.
And you don't end up arguing with a drummer.
That's true. No creative differences.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. So let's play the next song. It's called Long Time. And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this was the single off my Trouble's Door album. And it was funny how it was the first I built a house and built a studio, and I recorded most of this in my home studio, which was really enjoyable. And this was the last track on the album, and I actually did that thing where I went, there's no real dancey kind of singly track. We need one of them. And I said to my buddy Cole, who was recording the album, you know, let's go downstairs and let's make a dance track. And, you know, give me a four on the floor, you know, sort of dance groove. And I just started singing and playing acoustic guitar. And I played, and I just, I was lucky enough to just sort of make it up.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and then it was the single.
Yeah, huh?
So,
and
yeah.
So how long did it take you to write this? Is this something that happened quickly?
It was about a day,
yeah,
probably wow, 24 hours to write and record it.
Wow.
And the film clip is me and a lot of my buddies around the Byron Bay area surfing. And it gives a good little snapshot of our life, and it was the easiest film clip because we just went surfing and I got my buddies to all mime it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if anybody wants to see that on YouTube, check it out.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, Ash Grunewald, and the song is Long Time.
First I was next to you, I knew you'd be a long rain mama.
By Ash Grunewald, who we're talking to, an artist from Australia, and his friend Christian from Canada. Christian, you okay?
Good.
Good. All right. How long? How much longer are you staying in the States before you go back?
3 days.
Oh, 3 days. Yes. So you've been here for what, a month, you said already?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, 28 shows, you said.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot.
It was amazing. I got such a great impression of... it's just a fleeting impression, but I saw all these amazing places. And the amazing thing when you're from Australia, you don't... Everything's new when you see it in America. But actually, it triggers off these memories that you don't know that you have from all of the songs and the movies.
And the movies and everything. Everything. You know.
So, you know, being in Atlanta, Georgia, or, you know, Memphis, Tennessee, or wherever, it's just... You don't know how much you know about America until you start traveling
around. That's true, yeah. And you've been obviously to more cities than I have. And I've been here 30-plus years. Wow.
And people were so friendly everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and so helpful. And, it was just really, really cool. And the best thing for me musically is that people in this country really connect with my music more so than even at home. Because because I'm influenced by American music.
I see.
So that's been really remarkable. And
there's a lot of diversity here. So there's a lot of different people having different tastes in music and things like that. So that's very cool. I know. I love music, you know, and I can't... it's like I have music running all day, all night, and... It's hard for me. You know, the amazing thing is that it's hard for you to turn off the music when you have to leave or something, you know? And I know this morning I'm like, let me just jam for a couple more minutes with the song, you know, and stuff like that. So that's cool. So what are the plans for the future, Ash? Ash, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to be such an ass. well,
I'm still half asleep. Go on.
The plan is actually... quite an ambitious one, but this is the country for it. But, you know, just really love to come back. And I was poisoned with the pleasure of traveling around in an illustrious tour bus for the last month, which is now I'm going to have to... It's like sort of getting upgraded to first class on a plane, and then you've got to go back to economy. But, you know, I think it's going to be a couple of years of really hard graft and... traveling around in a beaten up van or something for a little while with my buddy Christian here and towing the family around whenever we can. But then hopefully in the quickest time possible, get to a level where we can at least have a bus with a small bus with a driver so that you can travel overnight and sleep because you just wake up refreshed at the next place and then just basically tour the US.
That's true.
And that's for me, that's a massive sacrifice because I wouldn't do it or even think about doing it in the past because I just wanted to surf every day.
Yeah.
But I have done that for like 15 years or something now, so it's time to put my head down and bum up and work hard on my music.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, and you have a supportive family that obviously want that for you.
Yeah. And that's the most important thing. And I couldn't do it and wouldn't even embark on this journey if that wasn't the case. But they're really excited about having the lifestyle of traveling around. And my wife is also an amazing musician. So, and she's more in the folky kind of country genre. And I want to, you know, hopefully get her down to Nashville and record because they've got this really cool setup there where you can just turn up and... basically have your songs and have these absolute pro session musicians and do it like they used to do back in the day. And basically they just learn your song and just play it straight onto an album. So it'd be good to see her do that.
Yeah, I know.
And Nashville's the queen of country music.
Yeah.
Call the king.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ash, tell everybody how they can find you, how they can find their music, your music, and so forth. Twitter, Facebook. I guess if people
website.
Yeah, no.
YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube.
Wikipedia.
Everywhere. Yeah. So just Google the name, right?
Google the name Ash Grunewald, spelled A S H G R U N W A LD.
Sounds good.
Do you like the prolonged D?
Yes, absolutely.
That's a radio D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ash Grunwald, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, Christian, thank you also for bringing him along. And were you the one that arranged the interview with Ash?
No, I did not.
Oh, you're not the one that emailed me, so it was the publicist probably.
Publicist, yes.
Right, yeah, okay. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Much success with your music and everything. You're definitely a promising artist, and you're hardworking, and that's important, I think. You know.
Thanks.
Okay. All right, everybody, thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.
Morning radio. Tune into Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.